Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the OIES China Energy Program. My name is Anders Hovey, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute, and today we're talking about the role of hydrogen in China. Specifically, we're discussing a recent paper published by the Institute and available on our website entitled China's Hydrogen Development, A Tale of Three Cities, which discusses the issue of China's hydrogen strategy based on the experiences and plans of the pilot hydrogen clusters located in Datong, Shanxi Province, Chengdu in Sichuan Province, and Zhangjiakou in the northern part of Hebei Province, which surrounds Beijing. We're speaking today with Arabella Miller-Wong, recently an Aramco Fellow at the Institute and also a research assistant at the Smith School of Enterprise and the Environment of the University of Oxford. I'm also joined by my colleague, Michal Maidan, Director of the China Energy Program, and also by my colleague, Martin Lambert, who heads the hydrogen research at the OIES. Welcome to you all. We're recording this on the 30th of March, 2023. I think we should start out with a brief summary of some key statistics on hydrogen, just to set the stage. China is the world's largest hydrogen-producing and consuming country by far. Presently, about 65% of hydrogen in China is derived from coal, 14% from steam reforming of methane, and about 20% from chemical industry byproducts. Now, China might produce as much as 25,000 tons of hydrogen from electrolysis, which is made from grid electricity or renewables, but this amount pales next to the 33 million tons annually for hydrogen demand. That hydrogen is used for ammonia, methanol, and refining. Now, for our first question, Michal, I'd like to ask, in the introduction to the paper, you note that other authors have already highlighted that China's hydrogen efforts to date are more focused about industrial strategy than decarbonization. What is this paper adding to that discussion?
I think really the interesting point in the paper is that it looks at implementation. We've talked about this numerous times on other sort of China program podcasts where the center says something and then you really have to look at what's happening in the provinces and on the ground to get a sense of how the general direction of travel is being implemented and how it will play out in reality. So the first thing that this paper adds is this sense check, again, of what's happening in different provinces. It looks at provincial realities because provinces differ in their industrial strategies and resource endowment, in their political situation and how they want to position themselves vis-a-vis the central government. The paper also, therefore, unpacks some of the challenges and the constraints behind hydrogen development in China. A lot of the studies that have been published to date have been very useful in understanding central government priorities, the importance that China, that the Chinese government is attributing to hydrogen development, and therefore the positive momentum that this has. And I think implicitly or explicitly highlight and suggest that China is leading or will lead the hydrogen race and will be the first to achieve it. And I think that needs to be nuanced. And looking at it at very in-depth examples, I think is the way to go about trying to nuance that. Now, of course, these three cities, they don't tell the whole story of China, but they are useful insights into what it does look like in certain provinces. And the final thing that I think this paper helps our understanding is of emerging business models. And this is something obviously that Martin in the hydrogen module looks at in greater depth, but this advances, again, our understanding and knowledge and our ability to compare and contrast how different countries are approaching their hydrogen development.
Now, Arabella, the paper does focus on these three city cases, but I think we do have to start with a little bit of national discussion. Could you outline briefly a couple of the key strategies and targets for hydrogen?
I would like to highlight the National Hydrogen Plan, which was released in last year. So there's a very important one called China's Medium and Long-Term Plan for the Development of Hydrogen Industry, the National Hydrogen Plan. So it lays out China's pathway of building a hydrogen economy. It specifically highlights and sets the target of the deployment of 50,000 FCVs by 2025.
Fuel cell vehicle, by the way, FCV.
Yes, fuel cell vehicles by, and also this policy paper calls for the production of 100,000 to 200,000 tons of green hydrogen per year by 2025. Like I also mentioned in my paper, this document is a consolidated policy paper that combines the previous goals and the targets regarding hydrogen development in other policy papers, previous policy papers in China.
Do any of the policy papers explicitly mention using hydrogen to address climate change by, for example, replacing the existing coal-based hydrogen stream with green hydrogen, or by decarbonizing hard-to-abate sectors with hydrogen in general?
Not specifically on climate change wording, because that climate change is already an accepted concept among governments in China. Specifically, the National Hydrogen Plan does mention hydrogen's important role in underpinning the government to peak carbon emissions, achieve carbon neutrality, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which has helped to set the tone so the local government should take hydrogen development more seriously. And the relationship between coal-based or fossil fuel-based hydrogen and green hydrogen isn't zero-sum in the perspective of this plan, this national hydrogen plan. Conversely, the government aims to use various sources to produce hydrogen. This includes renewables as well as fossil fuels. And industrial byproduct hydrogen should be the bridge for scaling up green hydrogen. So and the plan lays out to decarbonize iron and steel industries by using hydrogen as a reducing agent. It also plans to use green hydrogen in the process of ammonia, methanol production, refining coal to oil and gas.
So not necessarily mentioned explicitly as a decarbonization strategy, but indirectly, clearly a part of the plan.
That's it.
Martin, I want to bring you in now and ask how, based on this paper and what other countries are doing, how does China's policy framework overall compare in terms of pursuing hydrogen as a decarbonization strategy or in terms of industrial strategy?
Yeah, thanks. Well, actually, first of all, I want to emphasize one point you made in the introduction, Anders, about the importance of China in the global hydrogen economy. So, yeah, a couple of numbers. So, globally, 90 million tons a year of hydrogen, of which China is about a third. You know, so China is a third of global hydrogen. I think that's important to bear in mind. Also, I think in the paper, we talk quite a lot about fuel cell vehicles, as you highlighted, as Arabella was saying. But actually, for most of the world, that's not the major focus anymore. I think back a few years it was, but now the focus really for everybody, particularly in Europe and in the US now, is on decarbonization. So I think there is, so China is definitely a different emphasis. And we'll talk more later about fuel cell vehicles. But I think, yeah, the rest of the world largely moved on. But China is still often talking about hydrogen probably as a local air pollution solution rather than necessarily a decarbonization solution. And that was true in other countries elsewhere earlier. But I think it's not the case anymore. So from a European perspective, decarbonization is really the only reason for looking at hydrogen.
Yeah.
I think another change too, and again, I think China's ahead of the game in terms of industrial strategy, and the rest of the world now is kind of waking up to that a bit after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I think countries around the world are now thinking, oh, actually energy security is far more important. And in that context, I think, you know, China is pretty dominant in much of the supply chain for things to do with low carbon hydrogen. And I think the rest of the world is now actually looking to play catch up in that. So I think there are a number of differences in several areas there.
And just to clarify one thing about the China strategy is that although we mentioned fuel cell vehicles, to be fair, most of the fuel cell vehicle strategy at this point seems to focus on more heavy duty vehicles such as buses and trucks.
Yeah.
Arabella, coming back to you, how did you select these three cities for the case studies?
This is based on the primary three sources for making, for producing hydrogen in China, so which are gas, coal, and renewables. So that's why I selected this. Zhangjiakou, Datong, Chengdu are the very typical representatives of these three hydrogen production resources.
Now, Mikal, from your perspective, what do these three cities have in common in terms of the strategies presented?
They all need to balance industrial development with their net zero targets. And hydrogen is sort of a perfect solution for both. I think as a reflection of this, and as we've just discussed, they all have targets for fuel cell vehicle deployment, refueling stations, commercial and economic dimensions, sort of value add, number of companies, corporate investments, revenues, etc. Some of them have hydrogen production targets, not necessarily green, sort of not necessarily distinguishing green hydrogen. And really looking to capitalize on this new industry for which financing and policy support is increasingly available. They also, I think, all build on what Martin was just talking about, the policy framework that existed for almost two decades in China, which was very much focused on fuel cell vehicles. So it is taking time for cities to adapt to what they're hearing from the central government. And for close to 20 years, it was fuel cell vehicles as a way to manage oil import dependency, to create new industrial avenues for the auto sector. Now it's starting to change to gradually also become a decarbonization tool. So again, it's interesting to see how what the provinces and the cities are hearing from the central government is being translated slowly and filtering into local policy guidance.
And in terms of what sets them apart, we've already heard from Arabella that the choice of the cities is dictated by their resource mix. What else sets them apart in terms of their strategy, in terms of technology, in terms of capability?
I think certainly the resource base was the reason that we took them, because we did want, even though it's only three cities, we wanted a subset, a very different, again, resource endowment. But in addition to that, I think their industrial profile, sort of their development status, the wealth, the support from central government varies as well, as does their openness to foreign technology. So Zhang Jiakou is part of the Beijing Tianjin Hebei integration plan. It was a co-host for the Beijing Olympics, and so hydrogen was a big part of that. Again, it's not just the resource endowment, it's also their ability to introduce innovative policy design and the extent to which they rely on central government incentives, subsidies, and I guess sort of policy design, whether they replicate it or whether they come up with their own ideas on, you know, subsidizing power prices or sort of supporting through government purchase mandates, etc. So there is a big difference in how they go about trying to encourage the development of the sector.
Arabella, from your perspective, which of these cities is furthest along in its plans?
I think that would definitely be Zhang Jiakou, because first of all, Zhang Jiakou has the most favorable electricity price for hydrogen, but including green hydrogen production. And it's got the most hydrogen production projects, including green hydrogen. And out of these three case studies, meaning the most capacity of the hydrogen production.
And then is it reasonable to say that Zhang Jiakou is also the furthest along on green hydrogen specifically?
I would say that, yes.
Even though also green hydrogen has been mentioned frequently by Chengdu, is that correct?
You have to look at the fundamental thing, which I think would be the finance support to boost green hydrogen deployment. So if you look at the finance source in Zhang Jiakou and Chengdu, and you will find Zhang Jiakou would have much more financial incentive for hydrogen production deployment than Chengdu. And Zhang Jiakou got another very favorable advantage, which is the city has got financial support from the central government. I think that's quite unique among these three case studies.
Datong seems to stand out as the most focused on just boosting hydrogen production for using up its local coal resources. Is there any sense that the central government would push back on that, or that this plan would have to be revised in order for the province to meet its 2060 carbon peaking and carbon neutrality goals, where local officials have related performance indicators that they have to meet? Is there any sense that this plan will have to change?
I don't think so. So when Datong's hydrogen plan came out, it laid out its hydrogen production facility would combine with CCUS. even though CCUS commercialization has still got a very long way to go, CCUS has provided a solution for cities like Datong to grapple with balancing the use of rich coal resources and the carbon emissions. And also, Datong is a very rich coal city, so it's unlikely for Datong to give up on using its rich resources.
Now, Chengdu and Chongqing, which is nearby, they have a lot of hydropower, so it seems like they could potentially emerge as green hydrogen centers, but they also face power shortages and recently some shortages of hydropower. So is that a big fundamental constraint on green hydrogen, which is just the overall situation of electricity shortages recently?
I would think the fundamental constraint keeping cities like Chongqing, Chengdu from being green hydrogen center is actually the lack of flexible electricity market where provinces and cities trade and buy electricity freely. Regions in China with rich renewable energy resources are facing challenges, I think, such as to deliver produced green hydrogen to users. So therefore, there will be needing a market where users and producers can trade hydrogen, including green hydrogen. So this market will be needing to reflect the demand side for green hydrogen, which in turn could further facilitate green hydrogen's development. And at the moment, Shanghai is exploring to establish this green hydrogen market.
Okay, Arabella, one more question on city strategies. Why do cities see fuel cell vehicles as their main industrial strategy? Is that driven by the national technology priorities, or is it driven by local car makers who are promoting fuel cell vehicles as an industrial strategy for those cities? Or is it driven by the subsidies that are available for making and purchasing fuel cell vehicles?
I think that's actually the combination of the factors that you mentioned. So first of all, of course, local cadres in the government always prioritize economic growth as this is a central critical element for their political career promotion assessment. And FCVs and hydrogen's whole value chain would mean more jobs, more incomes, obviously. And you mentioned the car makers and local car makers like automobile industries would also benefit from doing these businesses. So I think this is a combination of all these factors.
Martin, I wanted to also come back to that topic with you. You already mentioned that you feel the rest of the world maybe has a little bit moved on from fuel cell vehicles for hydrogen. But how does the fuel cell vehicle push in China compare otherwise? Is China likely to be the main industry for fuel cell vehicles as a result of this?
I mean, I think it's important to go back to one of my sort of golden rules of decarbonization is that in general, if you can electrify something, then it should be electrified. And so that means that for most transport, then battery electric is the way to go. And China recognizes that too. I mean, as you know, Anders, there's a lot of battery electric in China. You've written about that yourself. So I think fuel cell vehicles is a niche. Pretty much the world, the size of that niche is getting smaller and smaller as charging technology and battery technology improves. And I think if I look back a few years, in Japan and South Korea, they have got a focus on fuel cell vehicles as well, but that's really been changing. There's a bit of hanging on to that in South Korea, but most of it really now is, I think, battery electric will do the job wherever it can. And fuel cell vehicles are in this niche, and as they enter into an increasingly small niche as well, I think.
Arabella, coming back to some of the barriers and obstacles to green hydrogen, what do you think the most important ones are? You already mentioned in terms of this hydropower issue, the lack of a flexible power market. Any other key barriers that you identified, and are those barriers unique to each city?
I think these three case studies has shown the very common obstacle for green hydrogen facilitation, which is the expensive cost of green hydrogen. So we know that in theory, the massive production could bring down costs. In the case of green hydrogen development in China, the factors hindering its massive scaling up can be found in the whole value chain from production, transport to application. So these expensive costs have prevented green hydrogen from being completely commercialized nationwide. So, and people would ask that the government could provide financial incentives, such as subsidies to support the establishment of emerging industries like green hydrogen. However, in the case of China, at this stage, the central government relies on a pathway that's scaling up the application of hydrogen by using brown and grey hydrogen in hope of this future big market would bring down the cost of green hydrogen. That kind of perception has sent a signal to the local government, I think, that is okay for the local government to focus on development of hydrogen generated from fossil fuels for the time being. In practice, most of the financial incentives has gone to support the value chain of FCVs, like research and manufacturing of hydrogen sector, hydrogen refueling stations. So therefore, funds for green hydrogen is just a fraction among all of them.
Mikhail, for China's hydrogen strategy to shift towards decarbonization, what signposts should we be looking for to evaluate whether that shift is taking place?
First place we always look, of course, is central government statements. And to be fair, the hydrogen strategy, first of all, it's been articulated after sort of lots of different hydrogen policies as part of technological innovation or, you know, fuel cell vehicle policies. So the fact that it has been articulated and that it does talk about renewable hydrogen and green hydrogen, even though it's not overly specific, is a good start. And we would need to see more of that. So more specific guidance. As things work in China, you need targets and you need slightly more ambitious and aggressive targets. But I think before or in addition to setting targets, we need better data. In the course of this paper, I know that Arabella was looking for data and trying to get production, consumption statistics. Those are very, very difficult to come by. Even national level statistics, trying to make sense of the annual data that we have from 2019 to 2022 and actually make sense of it, sort of find a coherent way of looking at the various definitions was not easy. So data would be a very good start. Anything from, again, benchmarking existing supplies, mandating a share of green hydrogen specifically, giving quantitative indicators to evaluate the success of local policies, all of that hinges on having good and transparent and regular data. From then, you can start to have encouragements and incentives to sort of credit systems, for instance, for incremental progress. So if Datong becomes greener and cleaner, that would help it, even if it can't match the kind of green hydrogen production that we're seeing in Zhangjiakou. And good national statistics would help prevent cities or companies just shifting carbon-intensive hydrogen production beyond their boundaries or, again, just claiming titles that aren't necessarily anchored in reality. The other thing would be if we would see a reclassification of hydrogen, which is currently a hazardous material. And that complicates the logistics, the transport, operating and dealing with hydrogen. That's not necessarily towards decarbonizing, but again, it just helps the hydrogen industry to develop. And finally, again, these kind of if we could see a differentiation or a distinction that fuel cell manufacturing as such is good in that reducing fuel cell costs would be good for sort of broader adoption in other sectors, but that we need to have a clear narrative about how China is looking to decarbonize and to find hydrogen solutions in other industries and sectors. I think the final bit of that, just to say that there's a top-down element, and we've seen this in other sectors that obviously you, Anders, have been looking at, wind, solar, batteries. Once you get the general direction of travel and the indication from central government that you want to go to decarbonization and green hydrogen, you then get a lot of innovation coming from the cities and the provinces. So while we monitor central government and look at the policy framework, we also need to, I think, continue to develop. And I think for us, there's more research to be done on more cities and more local incentives and how they're innovating and creating new business cases that then filter up to the top. I think Arabella mentioned at the very beginning, a big part of the policy paper that was issued was in order to streamline things that were happening in the provinces. So there's this constant back and forth between central government mandates and what the localities are doing and a calibration of those strategies.
Now, Martin, you've been looking at business models around the world in terms of hydrogen, including green hydrogen. What are the emerging trends that you see there that we could be watching for both in China and out and elsewhere?
Well, I think a key observation anywhere in the world is that there's not really a business case for clean hydrogen without government policy. And that's quite an important thing to be clear of. The cheapest way to produce hydrogen is from fossil fuels, be that coal or natural gas. And I guess with the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the high gas prices last year, that became a bit less true for a while. But generally speaking, that will be the case for the foreseeable future, that fossil fuels are the cheap way to go. So government policy on decarbonisation can come in many forms. So carbon pricing or mandates for low carbon hydrogen or tax credits like in the US Inflation Reduction Act or feed-in tariffs or contract for difference. So all of those are part of the clean hydrogen business model story. And really, from whichever of those or whichever combination is used, the key to attract private finance is then to have enough confidence in the future revenue stream so an investor can make the investment. I think thinking about China and the rest of the world, a key observation is there's always a question of who pays. So whatever the policy, who's going to pay the premium over the fossil fuel alternative? And in many, I guess, particularly in Western democracies, there's lots of balancing political objective. You know, keep the voters happy. And you know, there's been liberalisation. Is that still the way to go? Is that suitable for building a new industry? And so maybe it's worth just floating the thought that maybe in China, Mikhail was talking about setting targets and then you start to see action. And maybe we will see that with once a target's been set, it's easier to drive it through in China than elsewhere in the world. Still won't be easy, but maybe relatively speaking, maybe a bit easier. So I think it'll be a very interesting one to watch. So I'm sure in future papers we'll come back and look at that in more detail.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely to separate the targets from the policies from the viable economics as well. A target wouldn't be set unless there was a viable way to achieve that target economically, even if it's somehow subsidized. Arabella, Martin, Mikhail, I'd like to thank all three of you for your insights and thoughts. Listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this discussion, and please download the paper from our website as always, and feel free to give us feedback on our social media channels. We look forward and hope you'll tune in next time to the OIES podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.